Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Cathode Ray Mission. I'm your host, Adam Ferens, and tonight our topic of discussion is James Cameron, the writer, director, producer, and more, who is known for mega hits like Titanic and Avatar, as well as the Terminator series, the sequel to Aliens, and many others, including even some television work. He is, if nothing in his career, a very divisive talent. Joining me tonight are Aaron White. Say hello.
Hello.
Gregory Runfeldt. Say hello.
Hello.
And some guy named Carl. Say hello.
Say la vie.
that's Carl Kafer, folks, of course.
Yay!
Well, I mean, I guess it is. I mean, unless he's still stuck in the 70s, but... Oh, wait.
I'm always stuck in the 70s. Give me a break.
Yeah, it's a running gag, folks. So, as always, I'm going to ask a bunch of starting questions. And I'm going to go with you, Aaron. How did we first come to Cameron's work?
I was 4 when Terminator 2 came out, and I had already seen The Terminator. I don't know how that happened. I was not a kid who was allowed to watch graphically violent films at, 3 and 4 years old, but somehow I saw The Terminator. Saw Terminator 2 back somewhere between 91 and 92. Saw True Lies also on VHS once it came out. So I couldn't have told you who made them at that point, but his film definitely decorated my childhood.
Now, for me, it depends on whether or not you look at his work as a writer or a director. And if it's his work as a director, it's going to be Aliens, which I saw when I was 5 when it was new. Now, Rambo First Blood, I also saw, but that was a year later when it was on VHS. So, I'm going to go with Aliens because I think I probably saw Aliens first before I saw Rambo. But, I also, of course, saw The Fly and other films that most 5 and 6 year olds wouldn't have gotten to see. But that was just how it was for me. So what about you, Gregory? How did you come to Cameron?
For the life of me, I can't remember which film of his I saw first. It was either Aliens or The Terminator. But I think, and I liked both films very much. Very entertaining pictures. But when I saw Terminator 2, that I think was the first film where I really just was like, man, I really liked, I found Terminator 2 much more enjoyable. And on a technical, not just on a technical, just visually and the chase scenes and even the special effects were much better than the first Terminator film. At least I enjoyed that film more than, I remember more about that film than, the first Terminator. But I would say, either The Terminator or Aliens, just renting them, because they were very popular films. And remember laughing a lot at Aliens, especially the line when Sigourney Weaver goes, calls the alien, "You bitch," it was a very entertaining picture. Not as cerebral or as moody as the first one, but, still a very good picture, still very entertaining. So it was one of those two films, and saw both of them. I saw Terminator on VHS. Did I see Aliens in the theater? I think I actually did, because I remember people laughing, so yeah. Yeah, I did see that film in the theater, now that I think about it.
Yeah. So, Carl, you? How did you first come to him?
Well, let me pull out my walker here since I'm the old guy. And the first time I ever saw a credit for James Cameron was way before he was a director. And he of course, started his career with Corman. And the first movie I ever saw he was additional director of photography on Battle Beyond the Stars. Now, you know, and I also remember his miniature work in Galaxy of Terror. That one I remember looking specifically at that credit because that was damn good. Okay, I'll give Cameron that any day. As far as the director, it goes back to the original the original Terminator, which I'm one of the few people that prefer the original Terminator to number two for the simple fact that Arnold Schwarzenegger, who I love dearly, he only had like three lines in that movie, and it worked. Once they had him speaking in Terminator 2 sentences, it didn't work for me. I'm just saying. And of course,
so
his best line
question
in Terminator is not "I'll be back." It's "fuck you." Okay, there. I'm done.
So, my next question is going to be: are there any themes to his movies? And that question goes to you, Gregory. So, are there any themes to Cameron's work?
I don't know. I mean, the first two Terminator films could be, you know, obviously, you know, the technology run amok, right? The Abyss, it really isn't about technology. That's mainly just about discovering, you know, other life forms under the sea or in the sea. And Titanic has nothing to do with like tech or anything like that. Neither really kind of really does in Avatar either. So I don't know if there's any really like themes that run through his pictures, other than he's just like, you know, like just there for entertainment. Oops, sorry. Like there for entertainment purposes only. I can't really think of like, you know, a running theme through his films other than he's just trying to, you know, enthrall the audience. Other than the first two Terminator pictures, and just that we should not let technology dominate us because it will do so if we allow it to.
So my next question then, or this will then go to you, Carl. What about you? Do you think there are any themes in his movies?
No. Next question.
And what about you, Aaron? Do you think that there are any themes to be found in his movies?
You know what? I do.
Uh-oh.
I think that nearly all of his films are about hubris, especially of powerful men. Skynet was created because of the hubris of men who thought they could stop a phenomenon that's been going for the entire history of humanity. The Titanic was hubris on the sea. The Abyss was hubris under the sea. There's a lot of strong, powerful men who get their comeuppance in James Cameron films. Oh, and of course, Avatar is hubris in outer space.
You know, and here we all thought that Avatar was always just, what was it somebody put it? Fern Gully in outer space?
Yeah.
Fern Gully in outer space.
You could say there's an anti-corporate, like, theme through some of his films, like, you know, Yeah, like in Aliens, Paul Reiser plays that evil corporate guy who, like, shuts – I remember him shutting off the video feed that would, like, you know, that would have helped them, like, get rid of the alien quicker. It's been a while since I've seen the picture, but I do remember Paul Reiser played the evil corporate guy, you know. And then in Titanic, Billy Zane played the evil rich guy, which is kind of like corporate, the evil corporate guy of that time. And then in Avatar, you know, the evil corporation wanting to take over the planet, et cetera, et cetera. You know, so there is a bit of a theme there. So like an anti-corporate thing. So.
So, Carl, I'll ask this next question to you. What are his influences? And let's not get into the plagiarism stuff yet.
No.
What are his actual influences?
Well, to me, certainly Corman, because he worked for Corman, and anyone who worked for Corman had influences. You know, had him as an influence. But also, I think what you're looking at here is who are the modern science fiction or action people on a grand scale. And they come up at the same time. And I'm not saying they're influenced, but they remind me so much of each other, is him and Spielberg. And though with both of them, I will say that they are technicians and that they are definitely crowd pleasers. I'm not fond of either as far as a director, because I always ask for more than that. But I think if you strip it down, you look at that, I also see a bit of Kubrick in him, too, in terms of that overall scope and the technical expertise. So I would say maybe they're not exactly influences, but they certainly have informed his cinematic vision and what he perceives as a popular film. So that's what I would say.
That's fair. What about you, Aaron? Do you have any notes on influences?
I agree 100% on Spielberg, except for I would say he is an influence. Spielberg was definitely making films before Cameron. The story, and I don't know if it's canonical or not, but is that he saw Star Wars and quit his job to join the film industry, which means that he probably had seen several Spielberg films by that point as well. And that, Lucas was also very influenced by Spielberg, even though they're peers. So who's come since Spielberg who hasn't at least somewhat been influenced by him? Because the man's influence is just so far-reaching. I think that's a great pick. I think Kubrick, to a very lesser extent, Kubrick's influence is there because I think they deal with a lot of the same genres and Cameron's perfectionism as a filmmaker is rather exacting. Other than those, obviously, late modern, early postmodern science fiction, like Twilight Zone, Outer Limits, stuff like that, I think is definitely in his work, which we'll get more into later. I think it's all there, but I do think Spielberg probably is the biggest influence.
No, I actually like that. I actually do like that, especially since that'll help feed into one of the other questions, because people do like to compare Cameron and Spielberg. So that gives us something to talk about. Gregory, you?
I remember reading in a biography of about Stanley Kubrick about, there was a quote from James Cameron and how he said 2001 was like the film that really set him on the path for filmmaking. He wanted to know how they did all the special effects. That was the thing that really like excited him. Not really the story. He didn't mention in this quote, they didn't mention the story so much, but he just wanted to know how did Kubrick achieve all that stuff. You know, so I would say that Kubrick you know, obviously Cameron admitted, you know, that Kubrick was an influence in that way. And ultimately, you know, you look at Cameron's, you know, filmography, you look at Kubrick's, and they're very, very different. You know, Kubrick was much more, you know, deeper, more intellectual, I guess you could say. Cameron is really just, as people have said, he's more of a crowd pleaser. You know, he wants the mass audience. So he didn't really go for, like, the more cerebral stuff of the Kubrick path, but it seemed that Kubrick was the initial guy. It was the guy who initially got Cameron interested in filmmaking, and then the rest is history. But Cameron and Spielberg, you know, the Spielberg influence, you know, Spielberg has always been, you know, a craftsman for the masses, you know, and Cameron, in his own way, even though he takes forever between films, Spielberg does not, you know, it's kind of the same way, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that there is a Kubrick influence, but just one that, like, said, hey, I like this guy. I like this. And this what that thrust him into filmmaking. So I think that's, you know, the influence there.
Mm-hmm. So now the next question goes to you, Carl.
Okay.
And that's this. His films always make money and push the boundaries of technology, yet he's been accused of plagiarism and lost or settled several suits. What do we make of this? Is he really an innovator, or is he guilty of what Lucas and Spielberg are, to my mind, erroneously accused of?
Okay, so are you saying that Spielberg or Lucas are erroneously
let me put it this way. He gets accused. He, I think, is guilty of some of the manipulations and the crass commercialism that I don't think Spielberg and Lucas are guilty, or at least as guilty of, mm-hmm. as some would say.
Okay. Now I understand what you're saying. Okay. So is Cameron guilty of plagiarism? How shall I put this? How about fuck yes?
Yep.
Okay.
Well,
number one.
The question isn't, is he guilty of it? We all know he's guilty, but what do we make of it? What are our thoughts on
it?
Okay.
So what do we make
of
it? The man's a criminal. The man's an asshole. The man is not worthy of being considered a great filmmaker because he fucking steals from everyone. How does that set in there? Does that answer your question?
Well, that's definitely a position.
Okay.
And as a writer, I don't like having my ideas stolen. I don't like having people come along and say, well, I liked what you were doing, so I decided to take it and run. I'm like, yeah, motherfucker.
That happens quite a lot. It happens quite a lot in the Hollywood circles. Cameron is hardly unique in that respect, but yeah, you know, he did actually have to settle out of court. Which that for Terminator, the what was the name of the episode of The Outer Limits? Demon with the Glass Hand.
Soldier.
Right.
No, it was Soldier. Soldier.
Okay.
Soldier.
And if you watch Soldier, it has Michael Ansara in it, and as the soldier, and. There's definitely, I can definitely, you know, it's not a straight, like, one-for-one rip, you know, but there's definitely elements where you can see that Cameron saw that and said, you know what, I'm going to take this idea of a soldier from the future coming back, but I'm going to do this with it, I'm going to do that with it. There's enough DNA, I'm going to say, that probably 30 to 50% of the baseline DNA of Terminator is Harlan Ellison's, enough that he absolutely deserves a credit, and probably more than inspired by or based upon ideas by.
You know, Cameron should have just done what Charlie Chaplin did with Monsieur Verdot, and just say based on an idea by Orson Welles, which is in the credit. So that way he just gets it out of the way. You know, Orson doesn't sue him. You know, you just be shrewd like that. You know, you just say okay.
Yeah, although
Orson
would wonderfully slag the man to anyone who would listen.
Yeah, But I don't think he ever sued him for, like, you know, like back payments or like plagiarism, though. But, you know, Orson, like the directors back then, they shot their mouths off, you know, about who they disliked and who they liked. You know, I don't think that's a bad thing. Some people say it's very unhealthy. I'm like, no, it's not.
No.
Artists always
slag
each other.
And I'm not going to spoil much, but speaking of that, I've actually got an Orson episode coming up in a few months.
Ooh, fun. We can talk about all the things that Orson said over the years against other directors, see if he was correct. So, you know.
If by correct you mean a giant prick, then yes, he was correct.
Yep. So, what about you, Aaron? Since Carl and Gregory have had their say, what about you? What say you to this?
I dissent. I have watched The Soldier in the last week. I've watched Demon with the Glass Hand in the last week, and I watched Terminator yesterday. Yes, there is influence there, but there's influence everywhere. To me, there's not enough to justify a plagiarism suit, and I agree with James Cameron that had he gone to court, he would have won. But he was talked out of going to court because he would have been personally financially responsible, and as that was his first real film, he did not have the financial backing to do that.
And we do know that Harlan Ellison said, oh, this, you know, just like he said with City on the Edge of Forever, I don't care about respect or right and wrong. It's all about the money.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which, you know, I mean, yeah, it's about the money, but Jesus.
Don't ever try
to take the moral high ground if you're going to say it's about the money, say it's about the money. But you can't say it's about the money and then try to take the moral high ground as well.
Mm.
Yeah. I agree that the,
I love
the
Harlan, but I also have some issues with him.
Yeah, Harlan was not he was a little temperamental, you know, just you know,
a little.
I think it's interesting that you have Harlan Ellison, who, and I've mentioned this to people, but Harlan Ellison, who has this attitude about lawsuits, and what is one of his major contributions to Babylon 5? The idea of the ombuds, the judges on board the station, which are only used in the first season or two, and which he went to Straczynski and said, you know, we need some judges, some people that people can go to and sue other people with, because you just know that somebody's dog is going to shit in some alien's air hose. And we have to have a way for lawsuits to happen in the future.
Redub him Harlison Litigation Allison.
You should have
a lawyer in a film where it says, Dr. Harlison and Ellison, criminals at law. I flee some president, you know. I think that would be.
Gregory, his reputation is one of stern taskmaster. It is often important to try to separate art and artists, but abuse in pursuit of money and so-called art should not be swept under the rug.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think he's guilty of crossing lines, or does he strike you as merely being intense?
Well, okay, let's because I've thought about this. He Cameron gets as much flack as like some of these other taskmasters, shall we call them, like Kubrick and David Fincher to some degree, because Fincher and Kubrick shoot a lot of takes, right? And they like with Kubrick specifically, he would work up to sometimes 20-hour days, right? And Cameron has been known to, like, work long, long days, almost seven, sometimes even 7 days a week to get certain things done. But, you know, when Cameron is doing that, he's not off in some trailer, you know, just relaxing while everybody is, like, setting up shots. Because he talked about this on The Abyss, right, and how the actors complained about the long time between setups, right? But those setups were very elaborate, and Cameron was down there with his crew setting up the shots. He doesn't have an attitude. He doesn't have an attitude that he's above something, that he'll help move a light, he'll help fix like a light post, or help like lay a track or whatever to make sure the shot is there. He's there with his crew. He's like there with his soldiers almost, you know. And in some ways, he's sort of like an enlisted man that rose up through the ranks because he started with Corman, right? So he kind of worked his way up that way. So maybe that's why he's like that. But then you had Kubrick, who was also like that, who didn't really work his way up. He started as a photographer and then made independent films and then hooked up with James Harris and made The Killing, et cetera, et cetera. But Kubrick was known to do that too, that he would help move lights around. He would not, like, think he was above something. So, you know, if you're going into a James Cameron picture to work, right, it's the same way going to Kubrick. You know, you're going to work long days. You know, it's going to be hard work, but you're going to know Kubrick / Cameron. Both of them are going to be working as hard as you, right? They're not going to be off doing something else. They're not going to be, like, on vacation and say, hey, call me when the shot's set up. You know, they're on the sets like that. Now, as opposed to abuse, I've heard things. Is there a specific incident that you're referring to when you say that?
No, it's nothing specific. It's just more like what we've been talking of. People have called it abuse. And in all the research I've done, I've never heard, like, where he's screaming at people in a way that, you know, is outrageous, or that he is getting physical, or really getting up in people's faces, or, you know, calling people names and stuff. But Kate Winslet did say, I don't think I can ever work with him again. That was just too much. And she wasn't the only actor or actress to ever say that about him. And yet, most of these people who say, I'll never work with him again, end up working with him again.
Right.
So, you know.
And another example is like Otto Preminger, right? He was very difficult to work for, right? He was very hard, you know, he wanted things a certain way, like Cameron, right? But there were people, both on the technical side and actors, who worked with him on several films, right? Like Burgess Meredith. Burgess Meredith did 6 films with Otto Preminger, right? So obviously Otto got along with Burgess, and Burgess got along with Otto. In terms of Winslet, I remember Cameron was saying in the press at the time in Titanic, he said he would go up to Kate Winslet, and he's like, you want to hit me, don't you? You know, I'm just driving you crazy, aren't I? And she's like, yes, you are. And, you know, Cameron was like, yeah, she got it off her chest. It's like, yeah, she's still pissed at you. You're driving her. But he's driving himself. As you know, that film was supposed to be released during the summer of 1998. It was not. It had to be delayed because it was not finished. So, you know, Cameron was not happy with it.
Well, no,
so
it was supposed to be summer 96, and it got delayed till December of 97.
Okay, yeah. So, and then when it came out, it was the biggest hit of all time up until that point. You know, it was number one for 12 weeks. You couldn't get a seat in. You know, I saw it in the theater, and we were trying to, like, you know, everything was being sold out, but luckily we did eventually, you know, see it. And I always remember this bizarre factoid. It was knocked off its number one perch by Lost in Space, the remake with Gary Oldman. And I just thought I just think that's rather one of those more bizarre things in the film industry at the time. But anyway, that doesn't really matter. But yeah, so, you know, he is. And I've never heard him, like, having, you know, like, verbal tantrums like David O. Russell did on I Heart Huckabees, if you've ever seen that clip of him and Lily Tomlin, right? And, you know, people, and I mentioned Kubrick earlier, there's always the Shelley Duvall breakdown, but even Kubrick is not screaming at her at a level, of a high decibel level, like Russell was screaming at Lily Tomlin. Russell was throwing things, you know, calling her, like, horrible names, you know. And Kubrick didn't do that, and I've never heard that Cameron has done it. It's just that people find him exasperating because he's so demanding. Somebody asked about Sam Worthington was asked, "Are you? What do you think about Avatar?" He's like, "Oh, I'm just glad to be done with it. God, it was there for over a year." You know, he just said that. That's the thing. You're like, when you work with Cameron, you're there for a year, like Kubrick, right? So people get exasperated by that. That's the thing, you know. So that's what you got to do. That's what he does. That's how, you know, if you're working for, like, somebody like, say, Woody Allen, you're not going to be there that long because he doesn't shoot a lot of takes. You know, he's not a meticulous director. He's organized, or he directs in advance. He's like Ford was like that. You know, had all the shots set up beforehand, Fassbender, et cetera. So anyway,
yeah,
I'm bookending.
Did that in part because he famously didn't want the studio fucking with his films.
Exactly.
He wanted to give them nothing to mess with.
Exactly.
And yet they still did manage to mess with a few of his movies. Unfortunately, two of his late masterpieces in Cheyenne Autumn, Seven Women, especially Seven Women, which I think is for the time and a truly extraordinary
It is. It's a wonderful. It's an excellent film. It really is.
Oh, yeah. It really is. Hell, my girlfriend watched it with me when I prepped for the Ford show that we did back in February, and you were on that show. So, she was like, when was this movie made? And I told her the year, and she said, you're shitting me.
Mm-hmm.
But,
and the critics called it old-fashioned. It wasn't old-fashioned at all. It was, you know, it was a pretty risque film for its, you know, for the, you know.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Aaron, what about you?
We did a show on Fritz Lang about 2.5 years ago, and after his abuses, it's hard to call anything like working 60-hour, 80-hour weeks abusive. He's not throwing people downstairs for 100 takes. Anytime you have a taskmaster, you're going to get accusations of abuse. I think that he's more of just the old school taskmaster, though. I don't find him in my personal research. I'm going to put an asterisk there because I do not know everything about James Cameron. I don't care to know everything about James Cameron. But in what I've been able to glean, there's nothing that I would call truly abusive, though certainly he does work everybody hard. Though you have to also keep in mind these are union films that he's making, and if there was a legitimate complaint
of abuse,
would
yep.
ask.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, you know, this just reminds me, you know, talking about this, I remember, think about this. One of the reasons that we have some of the guilds and the unions that we have in Hollywood is because of the problems and the incidents and the injuries that were happening, especially in the late silent and early sound era, particularly things like the fear that the little girl had in Frankenstein, the one that had to be thrown into the lake. Boris Karloff was so horrified by what the little girl went through that he figured there had to be things put in place to protect children and other actors.
Mm. If I remember right, the film Noah's Ark, the early silent picture, people actually died during like some of
yeah.
the storm sequences, you know.
Yep, yep. Even one of Ford's films, no one died, but he actually had to shut down production on one of his westerns because somebody got bit by a snake and they ended up like losing a few toes or something.
Mm-hmm.
And he was quite pissed because you know, the area was not supposed to be rattler territory.
Right.
So, Carl, your views on this?
Well, as far as being the taskmaster, I worked for the Puerto Rican equivalent of Attila the Hun, and she threw typewriters at me. So unless somebody throws typewriters or is that abusive, if you're just a hard worker and you expect other people to hard work, I'm very much that same way.
Yeah.
So that doesn't bother me. You know, now if you're Ricky Gervais and you pull out your junk and shit like that, or you're Weinstein, that's a whole different story. Right?
It was actually Louis C.K. that pulled out his dick.
Louis C.K.
Yeah, that was
okay,
Louis C.K.
And
okay, also, I would add, when you mentioned throwing typewriters, Scott Rudin, the producer, he threw laptops at people. You know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, shit,
you know,
I had a grandmother that apparently got pissed at my aunt when my aunt was a mouthy 19, 20-year-old and threw a cast iron skillet at her.
Mm. Yeah,
no, 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 but I'm not joking about that type of thing. Or she.
Oh, neither am I. I'm dead serious too.
Yeah, it's just sort of we said before. Taskmaster, he's a hard. Cameron works his ass off, and he just expects everybody else to do it as well.
Yeah,
you know.
Exactly, and
so
that's the thing. I don't think that as much as the guy's a dick about certain things. that, you know, the fact that he's very much in the zone and intense as a director, and kind of, you know, the general in charge of marshaling the troops on his set, that's something that we should dismiss, especially when you're dealing with, you know, projects that are as vast as his are. You know, we've heard this about so many other directors. Aaron mentioned Fritz Lang, and, you know, excuse me, Gregory mentioned some other directors like DeMille, you know, there's, and Preminger, all these directors that did these big, epic, three, four-hour-long movies, you know, even David Lean, some people, as much as they loved him, they're also like, oh, shit, it's going to be a while before I work with David again, because you're just so fucking exhausted by the experience.
Yeah, because, like, Dr. Zhivago and Ryan's daughter both took about a year to shoot, just shooting, not including editing, not pre-production, so, you know, Lean was another guy.
Well, you know, I mean, look, Tom Cruise, who, let's not get too deep into this, but we all know that, you know, he's apparently possessed of boundless energy. He said at the time of Eyes Wide Shut wrapping that Kubrick was already talking to him about possibly being on the next film, and Cruise said, "Well, I told Stanley, hey, do you think you could maybe delay it a year so I can rest up?" Even Cruise was joking about needing a break.
Yeah, because that was a 20-month shoot.
And Kubrick was about
20 months with 20 months of shooting with Kubrick. You know.
Yep. But. Yeah, it is what it is. So I will ask this question of you, Carl.
Okay.
What is his greatest flaw as a director?
Well, I'm glad you put that caveat in there as a director. That makes it a lot easier. I think for me, and this is just personal, he's way too populist for me. You know, and it's populist in such a way that it's not escapist, right? It's not Lucas, you know, who's much more, you know, like with Avatar, there are these themes that he tries to shoehorn in and environmental, and it's like, it's in your face and it's being rubbed in like oil into your eyes. And it's just like, you know, it's way too heavy-handed. And he's way too populist. And he's, you know what the biggest problem is?
Where are the murders?
I'll sum it up. What did he say when he accepted his Oscar for Titanic? I am the king of the world. Guess what, James? Fuck you, you're not. Okay? You just think you are. Okay? So I better shut up now because I can just go off on a tangent. Never mind.
I always saw that as just him having a little fun in the moment, but, you know, that's me.
No, I don't think so. I actually do not think that. But that's...
But, Aaron, what do you think his greatest flaw is?
I think you alluded to it earlier when you mentioned him being responsible for a lot of the things that Lucas and Spielberg get blamed for. And it ties into what Carl says, but my view isn't nearly as negative as Carl's, I don't think. But he unapologetically ushered in my mind, this age of the blockbuster. And these IPs, tentpole films. And I don't think that his films necessarily are as mindless as some of the films that have come since. But I also don't think they're as intelligent as some of the films that have come since. Okay. I am mostly a fan. I do get a lot of enjoyment out of many of his films. But you see the same basic formula in The Abyss, which I do not like, as you in The Terminator, which is just make this as big and loud and as specular as you can and hope that the story is compelling enough to justify it.
So what about you, Gregory?
I'd say the biggest flaw, I mentioned it earlier, is that his scripts. I think it was either Carl or Aaron who said, like, a lot of times it's like a sledgehammer approach, right? Like an Avatar, like, you know, like, protect the environment now kind of thing. And, you know, when he writes a script by himself, like Titanic, right? The flaw in Titanic is some of the dialogue is very cheesy, right? And I remember one thing about The Abyss. I remember the first time I watched it, I said, this would be a really even better film if there was no dialogue in it, right? If it was just like some scenes like in 2001 in space where there's no dialogue. That would have been better because the dialogue in The Abyss is some of the worst that Cameron's ever wrote,
it's
in
so
my
bad.
Opinion.
It's so
it really,
well,
it really is.
Is that maybe not part of what we're talking about where he's more indulgent or overindulgent or self-indulgent than someone like even Lucas or Spielberg?
Yeah. Yeah, he is because I've seen both versions of The Abyss. And it's such beautiful, like, cinematography in that film, some of the best that Cameron ever made. And yet the script and, you know, he's not interested in the characters. They all seem like stock, you know, stereotype characters. There doesn't seem to be a real camaraderie between the crew. Like, you know, when you're watching films and you see these actors and you can tell sometimes if there's a camaraderie with them and that makes the film better. But in this case, you don't feel like these are real people. You know, you don't feel like they would really be working together and that they really cared about each other. You just feel like they're going through the motions.
Yeah, which I think is something you get in, say, the films of Mike Leigh, particularly Topsy Turvy, where you can totally buy that that's a troupe of actors and crew that have worked at the same theater for over a decade.
Yeah, that's a great example. That's a great example. Topsy Turvy is my favorite Mike Leigh film. So, and
same,
you know
same.
That you really feel like, you know, that, you know, it's Gilbert, it's Sullivan, the whole cast, the whole crew. They're really trying to make the thing better, or the musical the best that it can be. But you don't feel like that in The Abyss. Plus, you know, the cameo by Chris Elliott just kind of really throws the film off for me too, because I don't know. I just I'm like, what is Chris Elliott doing in this movie? But, you know, he's only in it for maybe like two scenes anyway. But, yeah, the dialogue in that is some of the worst that Cameron ever wrote. The Titanic dialogue is a little bit better, but that still was cheesy. Avatar, you know, the same thing. So that's the biggest flaw. He should get other writers to help him write, but apparently he doesn't want to do that now. So he's just doing the writing himself. So Avatar 2 will probably be very heavy-handed as well. So it's probably going to be like more, you know, protect the environment, bang, 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 bang. It's okay, you know. It's too simplistic. I mean, the visuals will probably be great, like The Abyss. The visuals are fantastic in that film. I will say this about Titanic, though, that, you know, there is DiCaprio and Winslet really do make you care about them. At least that's how I felt. That it actually is his most humanistic film, despite some cheesy dialogue. That you really care about the people dying, who are sinking with the ship. You care about Winslet. You care about DiCaprio. When the band starts to play, you know, on there, that's actually very moving, right? In my opinion, and there is actual poetry in that picture. So, you know. And I remember seeing it in the theater, and I was kind of making snarky comments in my head. I don't make snarky comments out loud when I watch films, even though some people tend to do that. But about halfway through the film, I told my inner voice to shut the hell up, and I just went with the film. And, you know, I'm glad I did that because I really did like that film a lot. And I still watch scenes from it, and it still has that, you know, I can still remember how it made me feel the first time. So it still holds up really well. But as you said, you know, as I've said, it's the dialogue, you know, it's the scripting.
Yeah. So, Aaron, you get the next question, and that is, what is his greatest strength as a director?
The visuals. And the technical aspect, technical about films are always perfect. In the films of his that I do not like, there's not a visual element that's fun. It's perfectly constructed. It just means the sum of the theory, right? When his films don't work, you go back to Shakespeare on that one. But they just look so good. I just watched Terminator 2 yesterday and was just blown away by how well the visuals, the digital effects pulled up from 1991. I swear to you, it looks better today than The Matrix does.
Well, it's because I think it was better imagined visually than The Matrix.
Mm.
Yeah. It was also a better, superior. It's just that's The Matrix has somehow become the monolithic science fiction film of the 90s, so everything has to be compared to it.
And what a pity that is when we have so many better science fiction films, but that's a whole other episode.
Absolutely. So yeah, the technical aspects, but specifically the visuals, are always top notch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's not one film of his where you say, man, you know, you can see the boom there, or you can see like, you know, stagehand, except maybe Piranha 2: The Spawning, which I've not seen, right? So
now,
I don't know. Yeah,
but that's my favorite film of his.
Liar.
I was telling Adam via message, we were talking about when a director tells you, because Cameron disowned that film, when a director tells you don't see my movie 99% of the time, you should not see it, right?
Here's also a side note. He didn't actually direct it. The producer, Asaitis, directed
mm-hmm.
it.
Asaitis.
Part of his contract was that he would put one of the young kids' names on it as the director.
Oh, okay.
So... I think James Cameron shot one scene just so that he could technically
get credit for directing it.
Credit for it, but he didn't actually make that film.
Yeah.
Mhm. Mhm. And what about you, Carl?
I have to agree. The man's a technician. He's a technician. The shots are good. The setups are good. The camera work is good. He works well as a technician. The action sequences are well put together. He's about putting together a technical film. This is why I put him with Kubrick, and why I put him with Spielberg. They are all the same type. They all really look at the technical aspects, where I think they all fail in some sense of the word. Is that the human condition isn't as, you know, really thought of as much as the technical. But he is a technician, and he's a damn fine one. And that I will say without any circumspect. You know, we all know I'm not a big fan, but he is a technician. He's a technical director, and he's a damn good one. And that I will say about him.
So now this one will go to Gregory, and that is, what are excuse me. No, I'll ask this one. What is your least favorite film of Cameron's?
That's actually pretty easy to answer. It's True Lies. And I just saw True Lies maybe about 2 years ago. I'd not seen it when it came out. I don't hate the film, right? It's entertaining. It moves and everything. Like we've been talking about, the craft is there. You know, it's not. So, but I just didn't really, like, get into it, you know. Maybe it's because it's, like, mostly a spy thriller, and that Cameron really isn't about, like, spy thrillers. Maybe. I don't know. It's not a terrible movie. I don't want to, like, give the impression, like, oh, dude, this is awful. But, you know, it just was one of those films I just did not really get into at the time. But, you know, I'd only seen it a couple of years ago. But every other film that he's directed, I pretty much have liked or have really liked. You know, I saw Avatar in the theater. I did like the 3D mostly, the craft, because the 3D was subtle, which is I like that about Avatar. But I always thought the script, as we've talked about, was very, you know, trite and very obvious and derivative. But I would say True Lies. You know, a lot of people do like that film, and I think it did well. It did well at the box office. It made money like most Cameron pictures do. But yeah, that's it.
And what about you, Aaron?
The Abyss. Because distinctly, Martin Scorsese talked him and Spielberg and Brian De Palma going and seeing that movie together and just being in awe of it. And so I was looking to be awed like the masters. And wasn't. In fact, was quite boring. The visuals were incredible, and admittedly, I saw a smaller screen than, you know, the cinema. And I saw it in 2022, not 1988 or whatever. But yeah, that one, it just left a lot to be desired for me.
Carl?
Okay, kids, drop in. Titanic. Biggest bloated piece of shit I have ever seen. No, seriously. I will back this up. I'm not going to be one of those. Okay, so 3 hours long. I walked out about 40 minutes.
3 hours and 20 minutes.
And I have seen it all the way through because I made myself do that. Okay? Kathy Bates is the only human character in that whole movie. Billy Zane is so cardboard. And this was the film that made me hate Leonardo DiCaprio. Seriously. I don't know what it is with him with the script and with the actors, but it just grated on me. It was a slog. I did not care at all. And in fact, there's the joke that somebody, yells in the theater, yeah, they all die, the ship goes down. Well, I knew that coming in, and it's like, please let the ship sink now. And that's the way I felt throughout the whole film. I know people love the film. I know it was one of the biggest box office things, and God bless them for doing that, but I ain't on that fucking boat.
Well, now we come to this question, and that is for you, Gregory. What are our top three Cameron films?
Okay, let's see. Even though you just dissed it, I would say Titanic for me. I still think that's an excellent picture. I don't think it's bloated at all. I think it's actually, like I said before, his most humanistic picture. And then I would say Terminator 2. And then probably after that, I'd probably go, oh, this is tough. Maybe a tie between Aliens and the original Terminator. I would say that.
Yeah.
Because aside from like what we discussed, the abyss, you know, visually was fantastic, but you know, the dialogue was horrible, was terrible. And Fear Lies, you know, I said I didn't really get into that. But yeah, I was gonna go Titanic, Terminator 2, and then a tie between Aliens and Terminator.
Aaron, your top three?
Oh. Aliens, but just barely, because Terminator 2 is also incredible. So those are the top two. And I've got to go with the first Terminator. I love those two movies so much. So, yeah, Aliens and then the first two Terminators. In any given order, with the first Terminator being third.
Yep. Well, you know, I'm going to have to say that usually I would agree with some of this, but here's the thing. I love the grittiness of the first Terminator. I've seen both the first and second Terminator so many times I've lost count. But I probably do prefer the second Terminator just a hair more. I will say that Aliens, I think, is a phenomenal movie. And then we get to my third choice here. And some days I will say it's True Lies, which I really have a lot of fun with. But most days I have to go with Titanic. It has its flaws, but I have to say that I'm with Gregory on Titanic.
Mm-hmm.
So. Mm-hmm. So what about you, Carl?
Okay, so Terminator,
mm-hmm.
I think is his best film.
Yep.
The one thing about that particular film I love more than anything else is it's the one film that's streamlined. It's the one film of his that's streamlined.
Yeah,
and,
I really do like that.
And I really do like that. You know,
it's very tight.
Then I have to
go.
Yeah, then I have to go with Aliens. Okay, and then it's a tie between Terminator 2 and Piranha 2. And I'm really not joking about Piranha 2. Because if you have never seen that, it's one of those so bad it's good movies, and I just smile whenever I see that. And I've seen it at least three or four times.
Okay, I'm good.
But
I'm glad you
if
saw
I
it
want to
because...
be honest, then I have to go with Terminator 2.
I was glad finally somebody had seen it. I've asked so many people that I know, have you seen this film? And nobody has actually seen it. So I'm just assuming it was just as terrible as its reputation. And you're saying, hey, see it. It's so bad it's funny. So, you know.
Don't always trust Carl on this. He's got very unique tastes.
Well, I like the Bastard Stepchildren is the way that I put it. I like the movies that nobody else likes. Because at least,
but this has nothing to do with Cameron in this case. We can all agree that The Sinful Dwarf is awful, right?
Oh, I hate that fucking movie.
I've never seen it, but, you know, you've talked about it many, many times.
Don't fucking see it. It's terrible.
So going about Piranha 2, it's not so much that Cameron had a lot to do with it, but it's one of those Italian knockoffs like Tentacles. That are just so bad that they're wonderful. And yes, Hugo Stieglitz is in Piranha 2. And God knows, you know, where there's Hugo Stieglitz, it's a bad movie. And it's wonderful. So there you go.
So the final question of the night goes to you, Aaron. And that is, what is Cameron's legacy?
Um, box office king, technical master, and pretentious jerk.
Okay, I kind of like that. I like that.
Oh, yeah, that's perfectly said. Shit. So what about you, Carl? What do you think his legacy is?
Can you pass me by and hit me at the end of this, because I'm checking something right
well,
now.
Well, nope. Gonna have to do it now because of the pattern I have on the show. So you're gonna have to go.
Well, so give me a moment here. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know what his okay, so I have a question for everyone first before I answer this. So can anyone want to take a guess how many lawsuits there was against Avatar? I want a number from each of you.
Okay, I'm gonna say 12. I'm gonna say a dozen.
Okay. Next. Come on, guys.
Aaron, you're next. Jesus.
Okay.
Just
so
give
Aaron,
me a number, guys.
So, Aaron, you said 4?
We just did.
Oh, okay, okay.
Okay, I didn't hear it. That's why what didn't come through.
Okay,
so there are 8 lawsuits just for Avatar. Now, a couple of them were thrown out.
So I was close. I was the closest. So does that mean that I get to come on down on The Price is Right?
No, unfortunately not.
Damn it!
But in total, it's 14.
Damn.
Okay? 14 lawsuits. Now, a lot of them were settled out of court. A lot of them were dismissed. But out of those 14, he ended up paying 7 of them. Okay?
Yeah.
Okay?
That's his legacy,
as far as I'm concerned.
And you know, I think it's interesting to note here, his legacy, even though, you know, we have another great director that admitted to heavy borrowing in Sergio Leone, somehow I'm not as upset or bothered by what Leone did with Yojimbo as what Cameron did with some of his work.
Mm. You know, there was another film, Italian film, Ossessione, Visconti's film, which was a ripoff of The Postman Always Rings Twice. They just adapted the novel and never paid James Keane anything. So,
yeah.
So there seems to, like, it seems like in Italy, and also there was a film version of We the Living by Ayn Rand, which was made during the fascist times in the 30s in Italy, and they never paid her either. But eventually she saw the film, and she liked the film when she finally got around
to seeing
it.
I'm glad she got stiffed.
Yeah.
Of course she liked it.
But the point
Sorry, should I say that? I'm sorry, ladies out there.
Okay, but the point being here is that the man doesn't seem to have any concern about directly ripping off people, or at least being accused of it, and of course he set a basic law in film that no longer does anyone have to cover because Harlan's dead. But you don't fuck with Harlan's money. He's the one who put that in stone because of what he did, and that was the first one. But he kept doing it and kept doing it. And that, to me, shows a level of non-caring about the other people who are producers and writers and all that he steals from, and he doesn't care. And that, to me, is his legacy. And that's going to destroy the legacy of a damn good director, technical director, as far as I'm concerned.
Mm. Now we come to the part of the show we call housekeeping. And I'll turn it first to you, Carl. So what do we have coming up on Deviant Legion in the next little bit?
Okay, give me just a second here, and let me get to the episodes, which I'm doing right now. All right, so tomorrow at 8 o'clock,
We have Down the Rabbit Hole with Rachel. We are back with TC and myself, and we're going to do a whole series of summertime songs. So that's what we're doing on Saturday. On Sunday, it's Rock This Town Radio with TC, and he's doing songs about mothers and fathers. And also on Sunday, I'll be guesting over at KSDAD Radio with Stephen Ronquillo, and we're going to be doing a commentary watch on Games, which is a Curtis Harrington film and an early James Caan film, and we're doing that in honor of James Caan's passing. And then on Monday, I'm very, very happy to announce that we are doing the Beach Blanket Binge, and we're revisiting the beach movie phenomena of the 60s, Frankie Avalon, Annette Funicello, Don Rickles, and the great Harvey Lembeck, and all these people, all these great musicians. And we're doing that with Mike and Cheryl Householder. And also Stephen Ronquillo will be guesting with us on that particular show. Then on Tuesday, you may not be aware of this, but July is Disability Pride Month. And so Rachel and I are doing a commentary watch on one of our favorite films, and that's Benny and June. And I just love the poker games in that one. So we're doing that. And then on Thursday, we're also doing a commentary watch in honor of the passing of Lenny Van Dolan. If you don't know who Lenny Van Dolan is, he was the star of Electric Dreams. He was also in Twin Peaks. But he also has a wonderful film that he co-starred with in. And it's a horror comedy called Teeth. And it's one of Rachel's favorite feminist manifesto films. And it's an absolute blast. And I love this movie. So we're doing that in honor of Lenny Van Dolan. And that's what we have so far. Now, do you have something a week from today, Adam, that you haven't posted yet? Or are you off?
One week from tonight, next Friday on the 22nd, Cathode Ray Mission will be back with an episode on the British comedy series, The Thick of It. We will also be back a week from that on the 29th. And two of our guests tonight will be joining me for that episode. Gregory and Aaron will both be back for the 29th when we do only the second movie we've ever touched on this show, and that is Sibberberg's monumental, and I do mean monumental, the thing is 7 hours long, Our Hitler, a film from Germany. If you are not aware of this film, yeah, that's not surprising. Look it up. It is available on YouTube. You can find it there. It is a highly unusual, experimental film. It's absolutely an art movie. And we will be discussing the one thing that people have always argued. Is it TV or is it a theatrical release? That's going to be part of the show. So that's in 2 weeks, but next week is going to be the much funnier, by far, The Thick of It. So, you know, now as we are wrapping this up tonight, I always like to ask this question before we part ways, and that is, I'm going to start with you, Aaron. Is there anything tonight about Cameron that we haven't gotten to that you would like to mention before we go?
Yes. I think it's time to do the right thing and mention that he is not always a jerk. And I will always be a fan of James Cameron for what he did for Guillermo del Toro. When his father was kidnapped in Mexico in 1998, Cameron personally put up the $1 million ransom to free del Toro's father and then helped him with expenses to move him to America so such a thing wouldn't happen again. So, yes, he is a massive jerk. at times, but he also can be capable of things like that, and I think that's worth mentioning.
Yep, and I want to ask before we do get out of here. He's also done some television. Cameron has. He's done some documentaries. He's done some executive producer work, particularly the show that he co-created and did some brief writing and directing on, Dark Angel. Is anyone very familiar with Dark Angel? Anyone?
No,
I think I saw like one episode.
Yeah. I didn't think it was great work. Jessica Alba was, of course, Jessica Alba. it's one of those shows that you're like, oh, cool, James Cameron's doing a TV show, and then you watch it and you're like, oh, yeah. Unfortunately, this is just a TV show. And it was the 90s, early 2000s. I forget exactly when it was.
Mm-hmm.
It was 99, 2000 when it came out. And, unfortunately, when I say it's just television, I do mean that in the way that, you know, it's just run-of-the-mill television. It's not that special television that rises above the pack. That we like to talk about on this show, or at least there's something.
Well, you mentioned people have said that TV is a writer's medium, and Cameron's biggest weakness is his scripts. You know, so maybe he's not really set out, you know, to do television, which is the mediums are obviously similar, but you know there are subtle differences between the two, so it's they're not the same.
So what about you, Carl? Anything that we haven't touched on that you want to bring up briefly?
Well, I would also just say, you know, he started with Corman, and his work with Corman was really good. I mean, he was a production assistant, though uncredited, on Rock and Roll High School. And of course, we talked about Battle Beyond the Stars. He was special visual effects for Escape from New York. He was design consultant on Android, you know, and production designer on Galaxy of Terror. And all of those movies are damn fine films. And as again, this is a guy that worked his way up from art department to design to photography, and you could see the work involved. And each subsequent film that he was working on before he started directing, you can see the talent there. And so I would definitely say, you know, look at his work before he was a director. He's also done a couple of music videos too. You know, so, I mean, there's stuff there definitely to check out. So that's what I would say. And by the way, nice call on Guillermo del Toro's dad that, you know, everybody can be an asshole, but everybody has an angel in them too. So God bless him for that. Seriously.
Yeah, I never knew that about Del Toro. I never read that. That was really cool of Jim's to do.
So finally, what about you, Gregory? Anything that we haven't mentioned that you'd like to talk about for a moment?
I think we've pretty much covered it, other than there was a thread on Facebook a couple of days ago about directors who've gotten married multiple times, you know, David Lean, Ingmar Bergman, and Cameron didn't come up, I don't think, even though he's been married 5 times. But he doesn't have any, you know, I'll say this, he's been married 5 times, but none of his ex-wives are going around in public screaming about him. So maybe, you know, I don't know. That's his personal life. You know, when I see a film of his, I'm not thinking, like, what kind of husband was he? I just don't. You know, and 98% of the people out there don't care either, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. it's a little different when you see somebody that puts themselves, say a Joss Whedon who talks about being a feminist and standing up for women, and then he's basically a rapist to the point that Michelle Trachtenberg wasn't allowed as a child actress to be in the same room alone with him.
Yeah, that's that. Yeah. So, you know, there's no stories about Cameron doing stuff like that. So, you know.
No. But I guess that will wrap this one. As always, thank you for listening. Thank you guys for coming in and participating. And I hope that we have everyone back next week. It'll be a fun one. And if you haven't seen the thick of it ahead of next week's show, give it a look. It's easily available. It's streaming some places. You can get the discs pretty easily from your library or even an overnight from Amazon. They're not too expensive. So check it out, folks. It's a great show that we've got coming up on that show. So with that said, I will say good night. And that's 1, 2, 3. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.